in 1997. That's 20 years ago. Jan Krakauer published a book entitled Into Thin Air. It's a personal account that describes the disastrous expedition that took place on Mount Everest back in May of 96. An expedition that claimed the lives of 8 climbers and served to forever etch memories of clarity within the minds of those now referred to as Everest summiteers. Now, those who've been and lived through the experience refer to the place where you rest up before you attempt to make the summit as camp number 4, the death zone. The camp is located on a plateau that looks like a moonscape, where you find yourself standing right on the edge of the Earth's atmosphere. They say that even the sky takes on a whole different, strange, dark blue hue. A reminder that you're as close as you can get now from Earth to space. I love the way one climber captures the experience of just making it to camp number 4. Only fear remains on everyone's face. People don't talk a lot. You rest in your tent, you feel weak, and you try to get some sleep before the final part of the adventure, the summit push. You are in the death zone, and you can't help but think that over the next 48 hours, there's a very real risk that you will not live. So you go over your gear in the daylight, you have everything neatly organized, you drink 3 liters of fluid, you bring another 2 liters of warm fluid with you. The wind rustles the tent canvas. You probably won't even sleep a wink. Take it easy. For as soon as you start the climb, you'll feel much better. Fear is always worse than the reality. It happened to him while he was descending from the summit. Jan Krakauer went through this experience. He wanted to wait for a bit while the others were still summiting, so he decided to stop and he asked a friend of his to just turn down the oxygen just a bit so that he could save the rest for the way back to camp. So there he was. I mean, he's standing there, he's taking it all in, and all of a sudden, he says he gets this sense of unbelievable control. He's standing on top of Everest, and he recalls this moment of absolute clarity of all things, looking over all the peaks of the Himalayan mountains. And then as quickly as it happened, it was over. His oxygen tank was totally empty. Turns out his friend turned the knob in the wrong direction. Instead of turning it down, he cranked it full blast. And so that moment of absolute clarity and total control was simply the direct result of an oversupply of oxygen making it to the brain. It was just a moment of illusion. Now, I'd say that for the most part, people live their lives in exactly the reverse of what I've just described. We live in a state of oversupplied oxygen to the brain. We love to think we're in complete control here, that we've got every experience of our lives in picture-perfect clarity, and we know what's happening and why it's unfolding, but it's all an illusion. It's an illusion we fall prey to every single day. Peter, James, and John stand before us today as a reminder of what life feels like when all of a sudden circumstances outside of our control envelop us within the confines of a dark cloud that is unfamiliar, foreign, and downright disturbing. I mean, this singular moment of what must have been sheer terror and panic for Krakauer as he realized the plight of his condition is most definitely what must have happened to Peter, James, and John. As the mountaintop on which they're standing suddenly is enveloped with this thick cloud, Christ is taken up before them. He is transfigured into a different way of being in the world. And then if that's not enough, there's Moses and Elijah appearing out of nowhere. I mean, catch Peter's initial reaction. Lord, it's good for us to be here. Why don't I build a tent, one for you and for the others? What he says, it makes no sense. No sense at all. What he says is exactly what anyone says when the illusion of everything we think is so okay and just fine is popped. And everything shatters before our eyes, and we're left trying to grapple with the meaning of what we're now experiencing. And just when they thought it was over, they hear a voice. I mean, let's just imagine that. You're on top of this mountain, and this voice thunders through the thick clouds around you with power. Power that resonates the following words right through the very core of your being. This is my son, the beloved, when with him I am well pleased. Just listen to him. God sent his son to earth to shatter the illusion of the power and the control we like to assume that we think we have over all situations in life. Today's transfiguration is a reminder for humanity that we are called to live in a state of trembling humility before the knowledge of the Almighty's existence, all that he has done and continues to do purely out of love for us. I'll forever remember being on pilgrimage in 2013 in the Holy Land. Had the privilege, the honor, to celebrate the Holy Mass right on top of Mount Tabor, the very summit where this transfiguration event took place. And I was making my way into the sanctuary along with Father Nathan. My mind was preoccupied. You know, you're thinking about trying to grasp the essence of what this moment means. And we walked up and into the sanctuary, and we got to the altar, and we do what priests always do before they start the Mass. We lean down to kiss the top of it. And as we did, this incredible shock of power, and there's no other way to describe it, incredible shock of power resonated through the core of my entire being. And I've never had that happen to me since. Do you think that I think God allowed for this to happen in order to get my attention? To remind me to listen to him ever more closely? You know, it's no secret to anyone. They say that after you've summited at Mount Everest, as you're making your way back down, and you come off the place that's called the balcony, you will pass by a good number of corpses. Deceased climbers. I mean, just this past May of this year, 4 people were found dead in a single tent at Camp 4. It's the death zone. I mean, how's that for a reality check? Mount Everest has even been named the world's highest open grave. Case in point, to reach the highest summit on earth, it's going to cost you something. Something very similar to that which it will cost. Everyone who desires to reach the highest summit level of what's reserved for human beings, which is the resurrection. Because you see, while this transfiguration moment, it sure seemed like a peak experience for Peter, James, and John. But the truth of the matter is that God the Father structured this event in such a way that it would lead them, and it's meant to lead all of us, all believers throughout the world who encounter Christ in this transfigurative moment. When we leave off of the balcony experience of his glory, we are being invited to be drawn back into the everyday passing of our lives through the valley of the shadows of death. Until one day we find ourselves summiting Mount Golgotha, and we allow for the crucified corpse of the beloved to resonate with power throughout the core of our entire being. Because watch this link I'm about to formulate for you, whereby the events that unfolded during this moment of his transfiguration on Mount Tabor parallel directly the events that will soon unfold at the time of his crucifixion on top of Mount Golgotha. At the transfiguration, you have three disciples, Peter, James, and John. At the crucifixion, you got three disciples, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of the sons of Zebedee. At the transfiguration, Jesus takes others. At the crucifixion, Jesus is taken by others. Jesus is elevated on the mountain. Jesus is elevated on the cross. Mount Tabor, this was a private epiphany moment of God. Mount Golgotha, it's a public spectacle. Here, Jesus' garments are illumined with glory. Here, Jesus' garments will be stripped right off of his body. Jesus glorified. Jesus shamed. Two saints stand before Jesus. Two criminals crucified right beside him. Today, the Father professes his Son. Soon, the Father abandons his Son. And the putting together of all of this is something that only God, by the power of his Spirit, can script into the passage of history. The putting together of the glory experienced on Mount Tabor, the life of Jesus of Nazareth, and the putting together of the cross experienced on top of Mount Golgotha. This is a terrible paradox of our faith. And it never, ever goes away. The glory, the cross. A paradox that doesn't leave any of our lives. And Jesus Christ, our Savior, he's found standing now, resurrected, right inside this paradox. But why? It's to make it clear to everyone on earth that the ultimate transfiguration reserved for us as human beings has nothing to do with any event that will ever unfold in our lives on planet Earth. Nothing. The ultimate transfiguration is what awaits everyone at the end of time, when our immortal souls will be taken and reunited to an immortal body on the day of the resurrection from the dead. And so for now, we're called to live our lives on earth, peeling back the illusions and living in the clarity of God moments as we make our way through the valley of the shadows of death. Because so oftentimes, you know what we feel like? Like we're huddled in our tent in camp number 4, barely catching a wink of sleep at night, because how am I going to make it through the next day as fear is coursing through our veins at 180 miles an hour? Note the last words of the Savior spoken to Peter, James, and John today, because they're spoken to each and every one of us. Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." Or in the words of an Everest summiteer, "Take it easy. For as soon as you start the climb, you'll feel much better. Fear is always worse than the reality."